Read my lips. No new taxes.
I'll make our government open and transparent so that anyone can ensure that our business is the people's business.
I remember landing under sniper fire. There was supposed to be some kind of a greeting ceremony at the airport, but instead we just ran with our heads down to get into the vehicles.
I will close Guantanamo. I will restore habeas corpus.
You're listening to Part of the Problem on the Gas Digital Network.
I can be the freest country in the world when you lock more of your own people in cages than any other country in the world. The lesson of 9/11 should have been to never fund another young rebel group in this part of the world again.
America started as the smallest government in history, and it's become the biggest government in world history.
At the end of the day, it's all about freedom.
Here's your host, Dave Smith.
What's up, what's up? Hello, and welcome to another episode of Part of the Problem. Do, 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 do. I just hum that beat to myself way too much.
Sometimes I go to Dave's house and hum it to him so he can go to sleep.
I just wake up. I'm like, I can't believe that's still in my head. And I look over and Mike's just right next to my bed, weirdly close. Like, Jesus, Mike, do you have a key? All right.
I have a back door. Well, I come in through the back door like the FBI.
Look at that. FBI SWAT raids and all. He fucking shoots my dog, throws tear gas in my baby's crib. I don't have a dog or a baby. Guys, it's going to be a little bit of a short episode today. Do apologize for that because I got to run. I booked very close. I got to go do Pat Dixon's Crime Report podcast. But what I'll do, like I always do when we're running short, is we'll go long on Friday to make up for it. So, which I think will work out well because Tuesday is a huge day in the race. And I use that word intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be huge.
Huge.
And so this is we're going to figure out a lot of what's going on Tuesday, and then we'll have a lot to talk about on Friday. As most of you who follow the race know, Tuesday is, I think, 5 primaries, and the 2 big ones are Florida and Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And it's right now, from the latest polls I've seen, it's looking like Trump's probably going to win Florida and Kasich is probably going to win Ohio.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's starting to look more and more like Trump's going to get the most delegates by far, but probably miss the needed amount to clinch. So it's going to be essentially up to the Republican Party whether they want to go to this contested convention or not. One way or the other, I mean, look, as we've said all along, it's just like the most fascinating election cycle that I've ever seen.
Definitely.
No matter how you feel about any candidate. And it's interesting, I think, from our perspective, if Hillary Clinton's going to win, which, you know, probably from the very beginning was the odds-on favorite, but if she's going to win, there's probably no better way that it could happen from the Liberty point of view than Donald Trump kind of making all this noise, then them just screwing him out of it, fracturing the Republican Party and handing it to Hillary, because it will, I think, be very, very revealing that the Republican establishment will choose Hillary Clinton being our president over giving it to someone who's an X factor, who just might not be bought and paid for. Like, they'd rather have a Democrat neocon than this Republican non-neocon.
Yeah, I mean, it's just to keep the illusion that there's separate parties, really. I mean, they don't give a shit as long as you're going to play by the agenda that they want.
Well, that's my point, is that it tears down that illusion a little bit.
Right,
so that might be, interesting in itself. It's not like,
there might be riots.
There might be. There might be. There. I don't know exactly what will happen, but people are... I mean, all these Trump... There is no fucking way that all of these, you know, angry... And I don't say angry in a shitty way. I think it's a lot of it's like the I'm mad as heck and I'm not going to take it anymore, people. There's no way that all of these Trump supporters are just going to go, okay, he got the most delegates, but sure, you want to pick Mitt Romney or whoever else, we'll get on board with him. No fucking chance. And Trump, by the way, absolutely has the money to run third party if he wants to. So there's all types of, even though he made that pledge you know, that he'll support the nominee. He can easily get out of that by saying that they stole it from him and he should have been the nominee. And
I just picture like these Republican establishment guys in like a room, like, what can we do? Can we dig up Reagan? All right, like create some Frankenstein monster that comes out. Like,
Weekend at Bernie's. Yeah. fucking Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm back.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so we have a little bit of a short episode today. So a couple things that I wanted to talk about. I guess the number one thing that happened this week or since our last episode over the weekend, which was pretty fascinating, was the other day in Chicago, this Donald Trump rally that got broken up and actually got shut down by protesters. And, I mean, obviously, look, I'm speculating a little when I say this, but it seems shady. It seems awfully fucking shady that these – I don't know where these groups are coming from exactly. You know –
I think it was someone said it was attached to MoveOn.org. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
quite possibly. It looks like MoveOn.org.
Soros.
At least there seems to be some MoveOn.org influence, some Black Lives Matter influence, some Bernie Sanders supporters influence. But I don't know. What's shady about it to me is when you have, you know, if you follow what we've been kind of talking about the last few episodes. So you have, you know, the former director of the CIA coming out talking about how they'll, you know, not so vaguely saying there would be a military coup if Donald Trump were to be elected president. Mm-hmm. And if he were to, order something unlawful, as if the same people who had no problem with the Bush administration are now worried about unlawful executive orders.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
that seems
around
a little bit shady. And then all of a sudden, like I said on the very last episode, it seemed pretty clear that the angle that the establishment media wants to go with is that Donald Trump's inciting violence at these rallies, and now all of a sudden we have these protests. And I'm just saying, this is right out of the CIA's playbook. Now, I don't know who's behind this. I don't know that the CIA has anything to do with this, but this is right out of their fucking playbook. If you look at what they do, like what, for example, what we did in Iran when Mossadegh was in there and we wanted to get him out because he was nationalizing oil that, you know, British companies were used to running. So when he said, what we do is we organize a protest, okay, and then that becomes kind of the catalyst for how you overthrow this movement or this leader. Mm-hmm. This is very Murray Rothbard covered this a lot in various different writings, but different groups like whether it's the feminist movement in the 60s, there's very blatant CIA connections. Mm-hmm. The National Review publication being started, very blatant CIA connections, and this is just saying it reeks of that type of stunt. Mm-hmm. Now, what's actually going on? Who the fuck knows? How organized are they? I mean, you know, it's hard to tell right now, but it does seem something about it just seems a little bit fishy to me.
Yeah.
Now, you know, we were talking about on the last episode, there was that video which was going around. It's also just amazing the disproportionate amount of coverage that it gets. I mean, there's like no one in America who hasn't seen that one video of the guy being punched. Mm-hmm. The white guy coming over and sucker punching that guy with dreadlocks.
Right. And now they're doing all these videos of all the times that Donald Trump has instigated violence or mentioned something about violence.
Which, you know, like probably is not tactically smart on his part. But, by the way, as we said before, just to say, that guy got arrested and charged with assault, and rightfully so. Anybody who goes and sucker punches somebody else should be fucking charged with assault. That's obviously you can't do that. And, you know, okay, that shouldn't happen, and that's the appropriate way to deal with it. Now, what you were saying right now, Donald Trump, this is why I'm a little bit sympathetic to Donald Trump, is because I don't care who it is who's speaking, and this has become the new tactic of choice from the left, is to just shut down someone when they come to speak. Like this happened with Milo Yiannopoulos.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
This happens with Christina Hoff Sommers when she goes and
didn't,
speaks.
Didn't Bill Maher have something like that happen to him on a
I'm
campus?
Not sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm
something
not. I didn't.
No.
I remember what you're referring to, unless it's something that I missed. But was when they started a petition to not let him come to Berkeley,
right?
Because he was going to give the keynote speech because of the comments he made about Muslims,
right.
And that's a lefty
who
they won't even leave. So even a lefty who doesn't conform, they'll start against. But I'm talking about specifically when they had. I think he did end up speaking.
Okay.
But I might be wrong about that. But yes, I remember what you're talking about. But then you know, these other people like Milo and Christina Hoff Sommers, they will literally come and try to shut them down. And I'll just say, I don't care what side of the issue you're on. From my point of view, there is nothing fucking weaker, nothing weaker than you trying to shut someone down because you don't agree with their speech. Like, not listening to their speech and then trying to counter their argument, trying to convince people over with your own argument. No, you know you can't do that. You know you're not going to beat Christina Hoff Sommers in an argument. So you have to I couldn't have less respect for anyone who goes and tries to shut down someone's free speech. And look, if you're doing it on someone else's property, they have every right to fucking kick you out of there. They could say, you need to leave now, and if you're not willing to leave, they can fucking move you. I have no problem with that whatsoever. Now, Trump was being asked about this the other day, and when he was talking about, look, I do get when you're trying to fucking speak to a group of people, you got 30,000 people who are here to listen to you speak, and one guy is going to, you know, just jump up and try to filibuster, heckle you so you can't get your words out. I understand getting a little frustrated and being like, yeah, get him out now. Mm-hmm. You know, the thing where he said he's kind of pining for the old days when he was like, ah, you know, back in the old days, they would have left him, you know, pulled him out on a stretcher, is a little irresponsible, because you got to think, look, I got 30,000 people listening to me right now. Odds are some of them might, when they hear that, take that as let's go. So he shouldn't have said that. Right. That was stupid on his part and a little irresponsible.
That's what he does. And now, he says a lot of stupid
things. Yes, well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
And now they're going to really try to bury him for that. But the truth is, this isn't going to work to slow down Donald Trump. This is only going
to
give him more juice. It's like when they brought Mitt Romney out to be like, you know, as representative of the Republican establishment, I think this guy's not okay. Like, Jesus Christ, are you out of touch? Jesus Christ, do you really not understand what the appeal of this guy is? That's his appeal. Mm-hmm. That's his appeal. Yeah. That Mitt Romney comes out and says, this guy isn't reined in by the establishment.
Right.
Great.
It's like the Dare effect. It's like, don't smoke this weed, kids.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, let's smoke it.
It's when Tom Woods and Lou Rockwell used to talk about this. It's like when they'd come out and tell you not to read Murray Rothbard. It's like, thank you. Please keep saying that. Yeah. Please keep telling these kids that this is the guy who you're not supposed to read, because nothing's better for his book sales.
Yeah.
And I think, there's definitely some of that kind of element going on with Donald Trump. Now, it really is, to me, kind of I don't know. It's a little bit of a gray area. Who exactly is inciting the riots? Everybody likes to go look at this one video of these two people scuffles. Everyone on the left side is saying it's the Trump people inciting the violence. Everyone on the Trump side is saying it's the others. I just said, like I brought up on the podcast last time on Friday on our last show, what do you think would happen if I showed up to a Black Lives Matter rally and started calling everybody a bunch of fucking racists? So they're going, you're all a bunch of fucking bigots. Fuck you. You know what I mean? Are you guaranteeing my safety out there? Now, if I do that, does that prove that they're all violent? Because I don't know, dude.
Yeah,
you're going to a protest of pissed off people. And again, I don't say angry or pissed off in a negative sense. There's lots of good reasons to be pissed off. But you're going to a rally of pissed off people and inciting a situation. Now, that's not saying that it's okay for anyone to fucking punch me there, but when that does happen, forgive me if I'm not overwhelmed with sympathy for you, because that's kind of especially if I was going there and attempting to shut down their rally, attempting to not let them speak. Like, they're all there to see one Black Lives Matter speaker, and I'm now going to not let them speak. And now, after these people have waited for fucking hours and I get the event shut down, I'm going to start celebrating and jumping up and down.
Yeah.
I don't know, dude. You might get punched in the mouth.
Right. And it's kind of ironic. I mean, these people are like, we don't like Donald Trump because he promotes hate and violence or whatever. So let's go hate him at his fucking rally. It's just what are you trying to accomplish by doing that?
Really is a, by the way, I'm sure I'm not the first one who's making this point, but I would love to just to beat them with their own logic. Well, I'd love for Donald Trump to come out to these lefties and say, hey, you know, you're encroaching on my safe space right now. We all just want a Donald Trump safe space where we can't, you know, I feel like you're denying our experiences. Give him a nice little taste of feminist.
That would be funny.
Social justice warrior logic. I don't, look, man, to come out and you know, we've I did a debate, not a great one, but a debate on the Trump Nazi issue. But I don't, it really is shocking to me. One other thing that I always, you know, I always just love to point is that the absolute intense hypocrisy of the media. But when people would have an Obama is Hitler sign in the Tea Party rallies, how much that was hatred, bigotry, evil. When people come out as a Trump is Hitler sign, all of a sudden these people are fine, and that's not hateful at all. That, I mean, it's just fucking ridiculous. It's a pretty inflammatory thing to call someone a Nazi or to call someone Hitler, and that's what these signs in the Chicago protests were saying. So I just don't know. It's literally like a... I don't know. It's like if I went to a Black Lives Matter rally and held up a sign that says, you know, black people are lazy or something like that. And if someone rips my sign, is that shocking? Is that shocking that that happened? Or is that kind of what you would assume would happen in that situation?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Maybe a lot worse.
Right. Yeah. You know, I mean, look.
I don't really see the value in them. You know, I mean, I guess they shut down, like you said, they shut down the rally from happening, but that's only making it stronger.
Yeah, no, you're right. Well, you're right about that from a efficacy point of view, from an efficacy standpoint. Yeah, you're not going to get, it's going to backfire on you, right? This isn't going to work. Now, look, I'm not against a protest. I think protests have done some good things. There's a difference between protesting something and trying to shut down someone's free speech, right? So if you're standing outside,
that's kind of more what I meant.
Yeah. Oh, sure. So like if you're standing outside with picket signs outside of a Trump rally, like even saying whatever you want to say, like Trump's a racist or something like this, and you're maybe starting a dialogue. Like I saw a couple of these YouTube videos where, and truthfully, I thought they were kind of dummies on both sides, but where it's like a Trump supporter arguing back and forth with a Black Lives Matter activist. I'm fine with that. Then you're kind of just encouraging more dialogue. But there's a difference between that and then going inside the venue and heckling someone. Look, dude, if Dick Cheney, who I think is a fucking war criminal and should be in jail, is speaking somewhere and 10,000 people go to see Dick Cheney speaking and I stand up and in the middle of his, you know, statement start going, you're a war criminal, you're a war... I'm going to get fucking kicked out because this is private property and other people are here to see this guy. They weren't here to listen to me.
Yeah.
This isn't a part of the problem.
You'll probably get roughed up.
Yes, and look, no one should have the right to fucking assault anybody. But if they go, sir, this is private property and we need you to leave and I won't leave, they have the right to remove me.
Yeah.
And if that means physically remove me, then they have the right to do that. So I just don't have a lot of sympathy for the idea of shutting down someone else's debate. And there's this thing, like I saw... I don't know if you saw, but there's this part of the Chicago rally outside. Maddie, maybe you saw this video where they're blocking traffic out front. Now, there's actually one, and I just don't understand how people can be on a moral high ground and do something this fucking, like to not, they're blocking an ambulance at one point.
Yeah.
Blocking a fucking, I mean, what the fuck is wrong with you? How do you not see the fucking how
Nazi.
Evil that is. Nice. I would have missed that.
Hey.
Do you know how fucking evil it is to block an ambulance?
Yeah.
This is the only thing this person can possibly be doing is going and helping someone who's injured and getting them to a hospital. And maybe getting them into an environment where some EMTs can work on them. And so there's that. And then there was this other, and this really stuck out to me particularly, where there was this video of them trying to block the highway. And they're trying to get in front of cars, right? So just getting in front of cars. And then this one car, he's like honking, honking. And then he starts rolling. Like, look, he's not going 60, but he's moving down at like 15, 20 miles an hour, which like, and people are like kind of pushed out of the way. And then right away, and you can hear from the person who's videotaping it, they're like, get his license plate number. Get his license plate number. He just hit me. You're like, dude, you're going to stand in front of a moving car, and then when you get hit by the moving car, be like, he assaulted me? Fuck you.
Yeah, seriously.
Fuck you, dude. I don't know what to say. I hope you get hit by the car. That's what happens when you stand in front of moving cars. Like, if you're willing to do that, to try to make your point, okay. But you know what might happen when you stand in traffic? You might get hit by a car. You have no idea where this guy's going with his day, what he needs to go do, what's going on in his world. So I can't get on board with at all. I have no respect for anybody trying to shut down someone else's speech. You know, Here's what you do if you don't like the fact that 30,000 people are coming to listen to Donald Trump speak. Try to convince them. That's what you get to do. You get to try to convince them that he's wrong. That's it. Sorry.
You gotta find,
your mic's off.
I guess it is.
Look at that. Can you turn it on or no?
I'll figure it out.
Yeah, okay. maybe they should have held a little rally of their own.
Absolutely.
And said, hey, you know, like that. I mean, like, hey, guys, you're at this Trump rally, but we have some information here for you that you might, you know, want to know about what Trump's saying. Here's the truth of it. You know, if you're a Trump supporter, if you're on the edge, if you're just here to learn, come check us out in the anti-Trump tent or something.
Yeah.
Maybe they could have done that. But no, but I don't think that was the plan. I think this is the plan, is to make it seem like Trump supporters are violent. You know, like you said before, that there's some kind of something fishy going on here, and someone's behind it, and they want to make sure that Trump is associated with racism and violence.
And it's just very interesting. Of once you start to go, like, it's like, what? Look, man, I'm not supporting Trump. Like, I'm a Ron Paul guy. Who could be? You know, just look at the two guys. How different is the guy that I would want to be up there versus Trump?
Yeah,
he's like anti-intellectual, and he's a buffoon. And I do think on a lot of issues, he's much like Bernie Sanders, kind of an ignoramus. Like, he doesn't seem to have a deep understanding or a deep philosophy on anything, which is kind of scary. But this the idea that he wants. He's strict on immigration, and that makes him a Nazi? Like, that's, you know what? That's a real celebration on where we're at, if you think that's Nazi-like. Mm. And I see some people in the chat were mentioning the Sarah Silverman thing. I didn't see this, but a couple people sent it to me. But I guess she dressed up like a Nazi and was doing a thing about Trump. And it's very hard to look at that and not go, man, if anyone on the other side did this, I mean, if any conservative dressed up like a Nazi to go, you know, make a point about Obama, or I mean, this would be just the most fucked up thing ever. It would be all over everybody's, you know, all my friends' Facebook and Twitter feeds would be all about how evil this was.
Let's try it. Let's go put blackface on and walk around in Nazi uniforms going, I am Obama.
I just don't even get, look, I don't ever like to play the offended role, but it's just like kind of pointing out that, like, how is that not more offensive? And then you've got these things where, so even my buddy Rob Mayhew sent me, you know, because I guess this was after I had that debate saying that the Nazi comparison isn't really that fair to Donald Trump. And he sent
me... But it's easy.
Right.
Yeah.
He sent me a picture, that picture, which is getting kind of shown around, of the Trump
woman.
Supporter with her aunt in the air. And it's like, okay, here's the thing, right? And look, to be fair, like, Maddie, I thought you've made this point before in the past, where even when it's a thing with a cop, and you'll see a video, and it looks so conclusive. And then as you find more evidence of the story, you're like, oh, that video was misleading. And if videos can be misleading, pictures can really, really be misleading. And it turns out that story was that it was a Trump supporter. She was surrounded by people heckling her, calling her a Nazi. And she sarcastically goes, oh, yeah, 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 I'm a Nazi. Heil Hitler. Then you get a still shot of that, and you're like, look, see, there's your evidence.
Yeah.
Look-see a Nazi. Kalen Mike's back on. Just in time for that awful
look-see
joke.
Look-see Nazis. Oh, God.
But my whole thing is, okay, so what? Even if there are people that are Nazis that are supporting him and all that kind of stuff, he's not like, you know, it's not his fault that people are attracted. You know, like, here's a good example, right? Like, didn't you say that there's like a core group of fans, the Opie and Anthony, old Opie and Anthony fans, the core like group who's like, some of them are just like really out of control.
Oh, they're awful.
Yeah, they don't take responsibility for that. They're like, hey, there are fans. Some of them are crazy. What are you gonna do?
Well, I just don't. Yeah, I mean, look, I think that's a very good point, and I don't know what you do about that at a certain point. And this does seem, look, this is a thing that they'll hit people on. No matter what you say, like, this will be a big feminist argument, is they'll go on some podcast, you know, they'll go on whatever, Gavin's show or Ann's show or fuck it, or they could do something with me or something like that. And then it's like, they're like, oh yeah, we don't live in a rape culture. How come I just got this tweet? I hope you get raped. And it's like, okay, look, that's shitty. That guy shouldn't have said that. No one's advocating he does that. But how the fuck can we control what any fucking 16-year-old behind a keyboard does?
Yeah.
Like, don't you, even if you hate Trump and you're on whatever side of it you're on, don't you think it's a little bit of a dangerous precedent to set? That he's got this crowd of 35,000 people watching him, and if one guy does something fucked up, he's responsible for what that guy does.
Right.
I don't know. Now, I do think, I will say, I don't think he should say the shit like, I hope this guy gets dragged out on a stretcher or throw this those person out without their coat. But you know what? The appeal of Donald Trump, and I got to say, I kind of like this too about him, is that he fucking doesn't hold back. He says what's on his mind. And if that means saying Planned Parenthood does great work at a Republican debate in South Carolina, which is the most politically inadvisable thing. Is that a word? Anyway, you really just got to sell it hard.
You just have to sell it.
Whatever, you know, look, if you got to take the good with the bad. And I don't like the idea of saying we have to live in this world where you have to be so politically correct and think about everything you're going to say to the fact that if anyone were to interpret this in the wrong way, I'm now responsible for that person's actions. That's a pretty dangerous precedent for me. I mean, that doesn't – I don't think that's the world we want to live in. And you know, the fucked up thing is like when it's on the other side, when we have people protesting cops and then one maniac goes out and shoots a couple cops, I say the same fucking thing. I go, yeah, you can't blame these protesters. You can't blame someone for protesting a fucked up police system and then one maniac's going to go do something. I mean, that's fucked up. But it's I thought it was completely unfair when the cops turn their back on de Blasio and they're like, he created an environment where one maniac from Baltimore could come up and shoot two cops in Brooklyn. I mean, come on. How the fuck can you be responsible for
there is like a bad side to pushing forward a false agenda that whole thing was based on.
Well, look, you know okay. What I mean? Sure, but even that, right? Even if you're so say like the hands up don't shoot narrative, which turned out to be bullshit.
That's what started this whole like over the past couple of years anyway.
Look,
really
if
got
nothing
things
else,
moving and it was bullshit.
Okay, but if nothing else happened, but here's what I'll push back on that. Mm-hmm. Let's say there was one white kid in the Upper East Side of Manhattan or on Central Park, who there was a dispute in how he got killed by the cops, okay? And say they pushed a false narrative. Do you think there'd be fucking thousands of angry white people out the next day? I don't think so. The reason there were all those people out in Ferguson is because they've had a fucked up, corrupt police system that's been policing for profiting, over-incarcerating, over-policing for decades and decades and decades. And it boiled up. And yes, there were a lot of people pushing a false narrative. But to say that people can't rise up and protest against the cops that they send their tax dollars to, no, they have every right to do that. And if some maniac out there then takes that, fucking the dude who shot Reagan, it was like Jodie Foster told him to do it or
right,
something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Hinckley. Yeah. Like, come on. I mean, crazy people are going to take shit even if there's no false narrative being pushed. And they're going to be like, you know, Holden Caulfield told me to shoot the president or whatever.
It's just Catcher in the Rye.
Yeah, you can't. Good. I'm like glad to see you knew that, got that reference. Dropping up. But you know what I'm saying? So look, even if someone is pushing a false narrative, you have the right to free speech, man. And you're not responsible for what some maniac does. Now, I do think, like I said.
But de Blasio in particular is like an educated dude. He should know better.
But de Blasio wasn't pushing the... De Blasio wasn't... What did he actually say? He wasn't pushing the hands up, don't shoot thing. What de Blasio was saying was, you know...
He was sympathizing with like the protesters and it's a bad look. I don't know if you're going behind people that are like spreading bullshit.
Look,
just not. I don't know.
Well, I think de Blasio kind of had to say what he said because of his family. You know.
Well, which is even worse. I hate that. Anyone who like backs up their family just for the sake of backing up their family.
Well, what does his family have to do with it? I'm losing.
Well,
your
he's married
point.
To a black chick, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that
so
doesn't mean there's lots of black people who are on the other side of the issue. That
but he had to kind of be a nice.
No,
nice
I think.
Guy
look,
about
I think
it.
He's been on that side for a long time. I think that's you know. Look, I think that's these left wing guys are on the side of you know police brutality is out of control. But look, man, there's a lot of truth to that, dude. There's a lot of fucking truth to that, Maddie. Let me tell you something. I was arrested for fucking for buying weed in Washington Heights. The way they talked to me because I could pass for Dominican when they think you're Dominican versus the snap that changes when they realize you're white is a real fucking thing. And there's lots of you know there's those videos online of that Puerto Rican kid getting stopped in stop and frisk and they call him a fucking mutt. Dude, there's a lot of anger there and a lot of it's justifiable. So and yes, but look at the number of people that are incarcerated for nonviolent crimes. There's a lot of justifiable anger there. And to say those people whose tax dollars pay for this oppressive system aren't allowed to come protest that because One maniac? Oh, dude, I'll defend the same way with Trump isn't responsible for someone punching someone. They're not responsible for some maniac doing some shit. That's at least
always
my take.
It's always one maniac that really, you know, that they're able to attach onto and then set a precedent to ruin everything for everyone, right? Like for example, with this San Bernardino iPhone thing, you know, they're attaching something to one maniac who did something wrong or one event that went wrong. I mean, we can't even go further back, 9/11. Okay, because this happened, now we have to do all this shit.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just they're just looking for an excuse to attach the agenda to a maniac.
And then it seems like for me it's like a very dangerous precedent and a very one more way to just shut down free speech.
Yeah.
To say, well, you know, if you say anything that could be, you know, and look, I've defended this position for years when it was, you know, way back when I was a kid and when they tried to I think it was Tupac who they tried, like someone shot a cop and then they tried to charge him because they were like, oh, he listened to Tupac's music. Mm. And then he went out and shot a cop. Okay, but how about the millions of people who listened to it and didn't go shoot a cop?
Right.
I mean, how can you just say, because one maniac interpreted this as I should go do this? Just
yeah.
Seems tough.
That reminds me of that other great Bill Hicks bit where he was talking about like all these heavy metal people, they're listening to heavy metal, they're blowing their heads off, right? You remember this one? He's like, okay, one less idiot in the world. Like, sorry. Like,
yeah,
sorry that you thought you had to kill yourself, but
you're
dumb.
The world's got lighter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good bet.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. That Bill Hicks. He's a funny guy. I haven't heard from him lately.
Yeah, right? What happened?
He's fucking... Anyway, let's abruptly switch topics because, like I said, we're a little bit... I'm on a time crunch today. And again, we will go long on Friday to make up for this, so look forward to that. And like I said, I think Friday, it works out better to do a short one here and a long one Friday because there'll be a lot of interesting news. I mean, if Trump is able to win Florida and Iowa and the other three, was it Missouri, I think, is going, and a few
yeah.
Watch out, because then it looks like it's a wrap. And I will say, man, I don't know. I don't know if the Republicans are going to steal this from him or not. I don't know. If I had to guess, I don't think he's going to get the delegates he needs to lock it down. It looks like he's going to fall just short of that, but still cream everybody else. But I'll tell you this. All the Democrats who were saying, you know, 5-6 months ago, oh, if Trump were to win, that would be easy. Hillary Clinton will destroy him. She'll win 49 states. Look, dude, I think Trump spells real trouble for Hillary Clinton if they get into a general election. Dude, once these two are matched up one-on-one, I think Trump is going to be able to attack her from all different types of angles that nobody's prepared for. Trump's going to be able to attack her from an anti-war position. Okay, you were for all these interventions that have been disastrous in the Middle East. You've destabilized the Middle East. He's going to be able to attack her for being bought by the big banks. He's going to be able to say, you are a puppet of your donors, and I know because I used to be one. That is a really crazy position to be able to attack someone for. You are a fucking puppet, and I know because I used to pull the strings.
Yeah.
And guess what? I don't want to pull strings anymore. I want to actually get this country moving again. He's going to be able to attack her from the left, if you want to look at it that way, on trade deals, because he's right there with Bernie Sanders on being against NAFTA, being against GATT, being against the TPP, which she's now saying she's against, but initially was for.
Yeah.
He's going to be able – I mean, look, he's even, as he's shown before, going to be willing to bring up the multiple women who have accused Bill Cosby of rape. He'll do that shit. I mean, she's going to be attacked in a way that nobody's ever attacked her before.
You mean Clinton?
Huh?
You mean Clinton, right?
Yeah.
Okay, you said Cosby.
Oh.
I wasn't sure.
I didn't even notice that I did that. He's going to bring up Cosby?
I didn't even notice you did that either.
He's going to bring up Woody Allen?
It's weird.
Wait, Cosby fucked Clinton?
He's going to bring up Bob Hope specials? No, but you know what? So there's just going to be all these things that he can go at her for that, I mean, look, Hillary Clinton doesn't do well with Bernie Sanders pussyfooting around like, I don't know, maybe the big banks want something for their money. What's she going to do when Trump's coming at her full blast? Oh. And he can talk about, I mean, he's got so much more enthusiasm around his campaign than she does. I don't know, man. The closer I get, I tell you, Michael Malice told me months and months ago, I think it was the night that all of us were hanging out, or maybe it was before that, but he was like, Trump's going to be the next president. I thought he was crazy. I was like, this thing's not going to actually go down that way. But you know what? He's a smart guy, and he might have been right. this if he can at this point, I'm starting to feel like winning the Republican nomination is more of the question. But if he wins that, I don't know how Hillary's going to handle this guy. Just my take. Who knows? Yeah. I've made a lot of predictions wrong. I thought Rand Paul was going to lead a libertarian revolution. Okay. I thought, truthfully, at the beginning, I thought Hillary and Jeb Bush were going to be the nominees. It seemed that way to me, you know, before Trump got in, when Jeb, they had managed to get him way up in the polls. And I was like, well, he's up in the polls. He's got all the money. And in my mind, I was like, you know what? In Obama's first term, we had this uprising, the Tea Party movement. Crazy grassroots anger, and who do we end up with as the nominee? The author of Obamacare, establishment favorite Mitt Romney. And I was just kind of like, you know what? They find a way to get their people in no matter what. Mm-hmm. They find a way.
Yeah.
But I was fucking wrong. I did not see this Trump thing coming. So maybe I'm wrong about this. But from where I sit right now...
Well, I think it's a good sign, though, for the people, you know? Even though they're misguided, they're still attaching onto something other than just this bullshit that we've been fed.
I was talking about this on Anthony Cumia's show when I was on last Thursday. But it would be a lot more upsetting from my perspective if, say, everybody was just like Hillary Clinton was just waltzing to the nomination and like Jeb Bush or Marco Rubio or someone like that was like winning. And it was just like there wasn't that much anger out there. And as people seemed overall happy, at least you can tell right now we are at a moment where people are really, really fed up with this bullshit two-party system.
Yep.
All right. Speaking of the bullshit two-party system, it's a good transition into the next thing that I wanted to talk about, which is the LP. And I've gotten a lot of the Libertarian Party, for those who don't know. And those who, I don't know. There might be some people who don't.
I thought you were dropping an album.
Thank you.
The LP, 10 tracks, mush mouth. Not a full, right? Was the LP is like a shorter than an album is the idea?
I guess.
Isn't that it?
I don't know. Is it LP and an EP? I never know which
LP,
one was
right,
which
one is? Maybe LP, maybe EP is the shorter one. I don't fucking know. Anyway, I was talking about the Libertarian Party. I've gotten a bunch of these questions. I got another tweet today from someone who was asking me to talk about Gary Johnson a little bit. And... you know, I've been asked about that a lot in the past. Like people are always like, why don't you talk about Gary Johnson more? Why doesn't he ever come up? And I have maybe briefly a few times mentioned this. And, you know, I'm not super interested in Gary Johnson. And I'll tell you why. Okay, number one, and this all stems from an interview that I heard with him years ago. Like at least maybe 2011 it was when I heard this, but there's some interview from like a hardcore libertarian radio show or something like that, or podcast, I forget what it was, but basically they asked him what he thought about Murray Rothbard, and he started giving kind of like a bullshit answer at first. Like he was like, yeah, you know, I think the Federal Reserve creates money and that affects the economy or something like that. And they were like, no, but like, what do you think of Rothbard? And then he just said, oh, well, I admit I'm not familiar with him. I've never read anything, which really fucking bothered me. I'm sorry. That really fucking bothered me. How are you going to be the Libertarian Party nominee and not know about Mr. Libertarian? Literally, I mean, the guy was very influential in starting the Libertarian Party, in the history of the Libertarian movement, to not know... I mean, the man represents, whether or not you're on his side, the man represents an entire wing of libertarianism. To not know who he was, like, And I remember the first time I presented Tom Woods with that, and he gave me, like, a very... This is before we knew each other. It was where we were just, like, at a... At
yeah, I remember.
Liberty
I think
Fest.
We were at Liberty
You were
Fest,
with me. And
you
he
asked
goes,
him and Bob Murphy, I think it was, right?
Well, Bob Murphy just seemed unhappy that I asked him the question. He was like, I don't know. Whatever, I don't know what you're supposed to think about him. Think whatever you want. But then Tom Woods said... He gave such a diplomatic answer. But he was like, well, you know, he's a businessman. He's not really an academic. So I guess I could kind of forgive him for not knowing who someone is. And I was like, fuck that. I'm a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
How am I more? How do I know more shit about this than you do? You're going to be our nominee? Like, no. So, look, the other thing is, he doesn't get anyone out of their seats. He says, he doesn't seem to have, like, that deep of an understanding of the libertarian philosophy. He says these things, like, I hate. Like, he's like, you know, we're socially liberal and fiscally conservative and that. And, look, the reason why you don't hear me talk more about him or get behind the Libertarian Party more is because, number one, oh man, this is, I might regret talking about some of this stuff later, because the more in that I get with, you know, people at Reason Magazine and the Libertarian Party and the Koch brothers stuff. I just don't want to be on record shitting on them. But truthfully, it's like kind of this Koch brother fueled organization that has done everything it can to kick out all of my heroes. I mean, the fact that they don't want to find any room for Tom Woods or Lou Rockwell or Ron Paul or any of these guys. I mean, I don't know. It's not doing much to motivate me. I look at it like this. Look, this game is completely rigged for a two-party system. There is no fucking way in hell that a third party is going to win with the way things are set up. So if you're going to be in a third party, the only real value is that you're spreading the fucking truth. You know, look, Rand Paul, at first, when he started, you know, kind of compromising the message, and you know, I've been on record on the podcast saying this, I was like, I don't think this is a good idea, but maybe he knows something I don't, because he's trying to fucking win.
Right.
He's trying to win. He's trying to get Mitch McConnell's endorsement. He's trying to get, you know, like the establishment endorsement. Okay, if you're trying to win. But when you don't have a fucking chance of winning, if you're not given a pure message, I just don't have much interest in getting behind you. That being said, I will take any Koch brother money that they offer. All right. Any position over there? Anything you got for me, I'll take. But I don't know. You know, the stuff with and once it comes to the
I
thing
think
like,
you're right, though, about the – it's just the rift that was created in libertarianism where they kind of told Murray Rothbard to beat it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's that divide. And I think that's kind of like where Cato
right,
and,
because,
you know, Reason.
Because they want – like, right, because it's like what? Like Murray Rothbard was too uncompromising? So what if we – if we can't not compromise in the LP, where the fuck can we be pure?
Right.
Part of the problem, ladies and gentlemen, that's where. But I just don't. So that's the thing. Now look, I have nothing against the Libertarian Party. Gary Johnson, I'm sure, is far preferable to any other candidate that's still in the race. I would, you know, if I did end up voting, he's probably the guy I would end up pulling the lever for at this point. And I hope the Libertarian Party proves me wrong and blows up and ends up starts winning. And, you know, good for all that shit. I do have a lot of respect for you know, Reason Magazine's a great publication. They do great work. I think Matt Welch is a fucking genius. Like, the more I've gotten to talk to that guy, that motherfucker's the smartest guy in the room, in every fucking room. But it's not getting me up out of my seat right now. Mm. So that's kind of the current state. There's my little more diplomatic answer. I hope if anyone from the LP was listening, they heard, listen to the end. But so that's kind of my take on Gary Johnson. I don't know, you know, please, libertarians, I know some people who listen to the show are supporters of his, so tell me what I'm getting wrong and why you think I should talk about him more. Okay, let's do, I guess, a few, some listener comments. I wanted to get into, I was looking at the YouTube comments the other day, and I found this one particularly interesting that I wanted to take on, because there are a few, I guess, of our listeners who, you know, we talked about race relations, I guess a little bit, or white privilege, whatever, last week, and there were a few of our listeners who weren't happy with my opinions or my thoughts. So I wanted to read a couple of these comments. All right, so I'm reading from the YouTube comments from last week's episode, Socialism is Communism. Okay, so Boris Sorkin, a regular listener and commenter, who I appreciate very much, writes, Dave claims that he is not a racist. But when he talks about disproportionate black-on-white crime, he instantly excuses black people of any responsibility for their actions, stating that the system is set up against them. So how is this system set up to favor Asians and whites over blacks? Maybe, just maybe, there's my catchphrase, it's low IQ and high testosterone. Stefan Molyneux covers this subject in depth in his web presentations. This Western society wasn't set up by people with average IQs of 85, and it wasn't set up for them. Most predominantly black countries resemble Detroit, Baltimore, South Bronx, South Chicago, South Central. Blaming white men for the failure of primitives is intellectually dishonest. Bigotry of low expectations, Dave. Okay, so I don't think I'm being a bigot, and I don't think I'm excusing any group of people. Now, when you say I instantly excuse black people of any responsibility, I'm not excusing anybody of their personal responsibility, okay? I'm not. Anybody who commits a violent crime is responsible for their actions, and they need to be punished accordingly. I have no problem with that, and I'm not excusing anybody. However, I'm not buying into this logic at all. Now, I will admit that I haven't I don't know so much of Stephen Molyneux's. I know he's gotten into this stuff, the difference between races, and I haven't watched too many of his presentations on that. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll go check it out and see where exactly he's coming from. I've just been busier as of late, and he's gone into that stuff now. But I got to say, I think a lot of this contradicts some earlier stuff that I've seen Stephen Molyneux do on the on how important environment is. I mean, when you start to look at things like mirror neurons and like that, this whole the idea that nature and nurture are completely separate things kind of starts to fall apart.
No, yeah,
environment
not.
Plays a huge, huge role on lots of things, including IQ and testosterone levels.
Uh-huh.
So it's hard to get a completely pure sample of that. Now, Ann Coulter has written about this fairly extensively, but when you take the example of black kids or black people who have two-parent households, have, you know what I mean, are in like middle income, you know, middle-class kids, their crime rates are exactly the same as whites. I don't buy this at all. I just don't. I'm sorry. I think that black kids who are, you know, if you take a black baby and he's adopted by a white family, he ends up coming out talking, speaking, and acting an awful lot like that white family. Now, in terms of you saying that most predominantly black countries, which I assume we're talking about the continent of Africa, predominantly black countries. I don't know exactly. I mean, there's others, but I assume that's a lot of them, and islands and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, first off, I mean, if you're talking about the islands like Trinidadian and stuff, they actually do pretty well when they come over to America. Now, to say that they look like Chicago and Baltimore and South Bronx, again, I don't know exactly what countries you're talking about. But if you're talking about Africa, no, they don't really look like – they look much, much worse than that. But – the problem is that you used Asians in your example here, too, and what do most countries in Asia look like? Those countries are pretty fucked up, too, but that doesn't mean when they come over here, they have to resemble that. And this is about, again, I think this just backs up the argument of environment, mm-hmm. not genetics. Now, obviously, I'm not saying there's no genetic differences, but look, here's a big, big problem in this logic. And this is something Thomas Sowell wrote a lot about. If you're talking about black crime and violence in the black community in the 30s, 40s, and 50s was far, far, far less criminal. Far less criminal. And they faced more social oppression in lots of ways. The black crime epidemic is something that is fairly, I mean, it's certainly much newer than anything that genetics could explain for. I don't think so, dude. I think this is a lot of it has to do with the I think a lot of it came in with the crack epidemic, the breakdown of the family unit, and the resulting, you know, police state that has come out of the war on drugs. So I don't see it that way, dude. And please, you know, show me some more evidence if you think I'm wrong. I'll go check out these Stephen Molyneux presentations. But I'm not ready to say that any of this. I think environment is responsible for the far majority of it. Now, that's not excusing anyone for their personal responsibility, but I don't think it is something about black people being inherently more primitive or inherently more violent. I don't buy that shit for a second. I really don't.
Yeah, no, I don't buy it either. I think a lot of it also came out of LBJ's you know, Great Society plans, you know, and I live down the Lower East Side, you know, it's like I see project housing everywhere and stuff, and it's just like that's a system to kind of keep people there, you know, keep them in that.
No question.
It's really hard to break out of that if that's all you know, if that's your life and stuff like that, and everybody keeps telling, you know, you have that kind of system pushing down on you all the time. So I can only imagine what it would be like. I mean, it's definitely a lot more difficult. And on top of that, also, recently, I mean, we know about the Flint water crisis, but in New Jersey, 11 cities in New Jersey tested like positive for all this lead contamination. Lead contamination in inner cities and things like that lead to ADHD, violent behavior, low IQ. So, you know, I gotta just say that, you know, most of it is just probably just this oppressive government that's, you know, out of control.
Well, look, it certainly plays a very, very large role. A very large role. I mean, between, and it's not just, it's like the two ends of the state both end up fucking over the black community more. Now, why is it that that Asians, you know, I feel like you almost make my point in your example. So why is it that Asians come over and are doing fairly well. Is it because our system is set up to favor Asians? No, I'm not arguing that at all. But I think these are cultural impacts.
Because if they don't do well, their father has to murder them with a sword.
Yeah, their fucking tiger mom's going to ruler the shit out of their knuckles if they don't get to violin practice. No, look, I think, and again, like I said, Ann Coulter's written a lot about this. Having a two-parent household, and you know, there's a lot of these things where, like, it's hard to exactly tell, to isolate one thing that is the predictor, because a lot of these things go hand in hand. So it's like when I was talking about that thing that Dana Perino was telling me about last time I saw her, who's, if you don't know who she is, she was a press secretary for George W. Bush, and she's a Fox News. She's one of the hosts of The Five. And they film their show in the same studio as Kennedy, and they come in afterwards, so I see her a lot when I'm there. And she was telling me about this thing they're doing with like this some initiative to get kids books, because they say that whether you're read to as a kid
is
a big predictor. Now, you know, I was talking to my mother about this recently. My mother's a psychoanalyst who specializes in child development.
My mother's just a psycho.
She's kind of an expert in this this specific field. And what she was saying, which I think is a very fair point, she goes, it's really hard to isolate just reading to your kids as a single predictor, because that tends to go hand in hand with all these other things, like giving a shit about your kid, being a parent to your kid. There's so many fucking factors, and I see this from
you can just read to your kid and then punch him in the face.
Exactly. Exactly. And if you're not reading to your kid at all, what else are you probably not doing also? Right. Talking to them, giving a shit about them. Look, man, I mean, I watched the way Lewis, you know, Lewis's kid, who's three now, and it's like, dude, every fucking day he is having a book read to him. Then he's playing with his blocks that have the alphabet on it. Then he's playing with the magnets on the fridge that have the alphabet on it. Every time he enters a room, someone's smiling and going, "Hey, James, good to see." Just being happy to see you, instead of the attitude being like, "This motherfucker." You know what I'm saying? That I think has a lot more to do than genetics. Now, there's no question that amongst, for lack of, to borrow Bernie Sanders' term, amongst ghetto black areas, there's this really fucked up culture that has seeped in that doesn't promote any of that shit. Right. And to be honest, Stefan Molyneux, I thought, did a really good job of covering this in that presentation, The Truth About Trayvon Martin. He talked about the like spanking rates in the black community and things like that. I'd look at those, and again, this is not, I'm not taking personal responsibility with me, but I'd look at things like that. I look at government policies. This is just, to be honest, what I think the root of the problem is. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that any violent criminal doesn't have to be held accountable for those actions, but it is such a fundamental thing of how you create a human being every single day. Every single day, every single hour, these things are being, you know, kind of built into your wiring. Mm-hmm. And human beings are made to adapt. We're made to adapt to ours. All animals are. We're literally made to adapt. We are here because we've been able to adapt. Mm-hmm. And that's what we do. We adapt to our environments. So I don't think I'm being a bigot, and I don't think it's low expectations. I think it's almost, in a way, two separate arguments. You have to look at what's going on, and then after that, you have to go, okay, so now what exactly are we doing to cause this? But the thing that I would really, I'd recommend Thomas Sowell on this, when there was less of this government shit that we're talking about, right? Now, there was obviously a tremendous amount of government oppression of black people throughout the history of our country, but when we didn't have the welfare state, we didn't have the war on drugs, all right?
Yeah,
go look at the criminal rates in the black community.
Yeah.
Go look at the when the other thing that you had was if you looked at the legitimacy rate in the black community, it was very close to where the white legitimacy rate was. And when you have that, you didn't have the crime. I see that as being a much bigger predictor, much, much bigger predictor. And of course, I mean, it's pretty obvious to anyone who has a very basic understanding of economics, basic rule of economics is when you subsidize something, you tend to get more of it. So, you know, with the whole welfare state, we're blatantly saying we will subsidize single parenting. We will subsidize having kids out of wedlock. So, you know, that at least is one of the factors that push toward us getting more of it.
So we'll guarantee that we'll always have your allegiance to an
authoritarian?
God damn it.
That's where you're going.
Authoritarian system. Yes. They guarantee that you always vote for someone that'll guarantee those things to you, and that you'll always have government to thank for giving you, you know, some semblance of a life.
Yeah. Look, Choo-choo-choo. I agree with you. Yeah, that's my. That's my. I'm not sure.
Usually it's a cha-cha-cha. That was a. That was a choo-choo-choo.
Someone in the chat did a fucking. When you started the listener comments.
Oh, it's a classic Dave move of trying to find a. Cha cha cha, where are we? Cha 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 cha.
That is, it is really.
Let me get to the next comment. Cha 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 cha.
I don't know what. I don't exactly. What exactly does it mean to be a? I mean, I know what a cuck is in like watching your chick get fucked.
Yeah.
But what is the cuckservative exactly? What exactly does that mean? Because I get that term a lot. Someone in the chat.
Maddie knows. What is it?
That's that's just the context. Well,
what does that mean? That means you're just like kind of like an establishment conservative or something like that, because that would
I guess you're just not. I don't even know how to fucking word it.
All right. Well, someone, let me know. Let me know what that means for.
I guess you're just not man enough to take care of your own shit. That's the only context I could think to put it in.
Someone's telling me I am a cuck. Someone else is saying way to not be a cuck. I don't. You got to explain this to me a little bit better with that accusation. It's
probably the same people that like use the word hack out of context. They just don't know what they're talking about.
I don't know if that's what it means. Hack? I don't think.
No, I'm saying like they're not using it correctly.
Maybe it means like you're a fuckboy. You know what that is?
What's a fuckboy? Like oh, that's like a like gay dude who gets...
I think it means like you're just like a bitch.
Yeah.
All right. I don't think let us know. I don't think you guys are right.
Let us know in the chat.
All right. I'm just looking through the live chat. Chat in. If anyone wanted to ask a question. But listen, man. All right, let's do one more. I'll do one more listener comment, and then we're going to have to wrap on that. Okay. Choo-choo-choo. Well, Jean-Juste Turf. Jean-Juste Verhoef.
Nothing. What? I'm just nailing you on the choo-choo-choo.
Now we're just very aware of it.
Okay, so sorry. Honestly, I wasn't even aware of that
It's fine, man.
Well, Jean-Juste Verhoef just basically said you were right. Bernie Sanders did say white people don't know what it's like to be poor. I believe he did walk that back a couple days later, but I thought it was worth pointing out just because of how blatantly pandering that statement is. Mm-hmm. You know, just but yeah, he did. Afterward, he was like, no, of course, white people know what it's like to be poor. All right, let's go one more. God, these are all long comments. Okay, here. Elvis Huxley writes, guest suggestion, Michael Malice, who I brought up earlier. He's a smart, entertaining guy, always great with Tom Woods. I liked his fill-in for Gavin the other day, too. Yeah, look, I'm going to, I will reach out to Michael and try to have that. I'm a big fan of his.
Yeah.
And I would love to get him on the show.
He always brings an interesting perspective to things.
He's great.
Yeah.
He is a very, very smart guy and gives zero fucks, which are a really great combination to have.
Mm-hmm.
So, we'll definitely get him in. And I'll tell you, I don't know, whatever it is, I have been in the mood to debate more. And I think I'm setting up the next part of the problem debate, which will, I promise, be better than the first one. We're not going to do another one like that one with John Wendell, which was just kind of silly. But the next one that I think rough idea for the topic is going to be what are the main causes of Islamic terrorism against the United States, whereas I'm arguing it's the blowback Ron Paul argument, and not just something fundamental to Islam that makes them hate us.
Are you going to be debating Sam Harris?
No, we could not get Sam, but we're not. It's not for sure yet. But that's the idea. But I'm trying to get someone. The guy I've got in mind is a very smart guy, so cool. I think that would be a cool,
be a
interesting
debate. Yeah.
And to kind of go over my belief that that American foreign policy is what is to blame. Primarily, of course, as there's lots of factors in the world, but primarily is what's to blame for the terrorist threats that we are dealing with, which is very, I really believe personally, you got to do mental gymnastics to get around that fact. They go, well, Islam's been violent since the 7th century, and you're like, yeah. Lots of people were violent in the 7th century. That doesn't really make you stand out. The groups that come over here and fuck with us are like Al-Qaeda and ISIS. We armed both of them. How you can divorce us from... I got to stop doing that. But how you can divorce the federal government's military and the Pentagon from that is tough to me. All right, look, we got to wrap there. I do appreciate you guys listening. Again, my apologies for it being a short episode. We'll get a longer episode to make up for it on Friday. tomorrow's going to be interesting, ladies and gentlemen. So we will see what happens. If it's if it's all Trump tomorrow, then he's off to the races. And if not, then we see what this establishment wants to do. Or do they want to fracture this party just to get just to keep Trump out? And man, I gotta say, I am fucking fascinated to see how it all goes down. So anyway, you guys, anyway, it's not Kurt Metzger, by the way, because people are speculating about that. Not Kurt. No plans of debating him. But anyway, thank you guys for listening. We'll be back on Friday with a special long episode covering Tuesday's results. So have a good week, guys. See you soon.
Peace out.